Be sure with Pure. This is Pure Oil News Time featuring H.V. Kaltenborn and Richard Harkness. Tonight, the Pure Oil Company presents Mr. Harkness with the news and his own analysis of current events. The man who saw his doctor about a buzzing in his ears only to be told that his shirt collar was too tight was simply a ridiculous character. But a lot of us put up with petty annoyances about our cars, which often are ridiculously simple to prevent. The hard starting, sputtering performance, difficult gear shifting, embarrassing battery failure, and occasional radiator freeze-up that many are going to experience in the next few months are really easy to avoid. An ounce of prevention is the medicine. And your Pure Oil dealer's famous bumper-to-bumper changeover service is a whopping big ounce. It's the fresh winter weight oil for quicker starting, fresh chassis lubrication to save wear and tear on you and your car, fresh gear lube to make gear shifting easier, spark plug service to save gas, air cleaner service for smooth performance, antifreeze and fresh wheel bearing grease for safety's sake. All that and a 10-point safety checkup, too. Bumper-to-bumper service. Get it all, get it early this fall, to keep your car a happy thing to drive this winter. Now the Pure Oil Company brings you Richard Harkness.
Good evening. It's the same old story from all around the country today on our second Meatless Tuesday. Most citizens, most eating places cooperate. But there are instances, too, such as happened in Cleveland. The Cleveland Chamber of Commerce met at lunch. Members heard a report on Hungry Europe by a newspaper man just back. And the Cleveland Chamber of Commerce featured at this luncheon today baked ham. Well, then, checking here and there, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, butchers say that the sale of meat is down only slightly. Taking the country as a whole, estimates on the saving of meat runs as high as 70%, as low as only 30%. The story seems to be it's better this week than last, but net results this meatless day are at best spotty. A reaction that's significant, perhaps, comes from the city of Chicago. Butchers say there that men who bought meat today, they offered no excuses. Many of these men were war veterans. They explained that they ate K rations, they ate canned meat during the war, and they expect something better now. It would be simple, of course, to point to Washington and say there's the reason that we aren't having real meatless days to feed Europe. You can make out a case there, all right. The President's Food Conservation Committee did rush out with a plan before it really had a plan. It's a fact, too, the committee stubbed a political toe on those poultryless and eggless Thursdays. It may be the committee cannot make its chickenless Thursday stick. The word is this evening, the committee may change its line. It may ask housewives to buy up older chickens for stews, and thus we would eat up at least part of the 185 million pounds of chicken that we have in storage. However, when you consider the job the food committee has to do, it's plain to see why Chairman Charles Luckman has any real authority. Now, Herbert Hoover, you know, pulled us through the food crisis of 1917 and 1918. But Mr. Hoover had some power under law to make food allocations. He could hold down prices, and he could even break up and punish hoarding. If Mr. Hoover wanted to close down distilleries and breweries to save grain, he didn't have to ask. He could order them to shut down. But we see this evening, Charles Luckman can only ask brewers to ease up on beer. And if price of wheat went too high in those days, Hoover had authority to put a ceiling on wheat prices to see it that farmers receive still a reasonable profit. Now, the law that under which Mr. Hoover operated was known as the Lever Act. And if the Luckman Food Conservation Program now fails, there are those in Washington who believe that President Truman may ask Congress for a new lever law to force saving of food. Well, the food program ties in closely, of course, with our new post-war American foreign policy. The administration scored one victory for its international program today, and in another case, it came out with at least a tie. Both of our major labor unions are holding now their national conventions. The American Federation of Labor is meeting in San Francisco, and the CIO is sitting in Boston, and both groups took formal action today on foreign relations. The AFL takes note of what it calls the prevailing dangerous international tension. It goes so far as to accuse Russia of acting as if it were at war already against the American people. And to hold back communism in Europe, the AFL endorses fully the president's foreign relief program It comes out more important for the $16 billion Marshall Plan. So, there is a plain victory for the administration, the support of the American Federation of Labor for its policy. The CIO takes somewhat the same, but a more modified line on our foreign relations. The CIO sees, too, the world torn by dissension and conflict. It sees the need of the United States sending food abroad, of helping in the economic rehabilitation. But there is no blanket endorsement of the Truman Doctrine, the Marshall Plan, from the CIO. Now, all the evidence points one way this evening. The administration wants very much to have CIO support. Secretary of State George Marshall will speak in Boston to the CIO convention tomorrow. Now, this will be his first address to any labor group. We may put it down as significant, then, General Marshall's decision to speak tomorrow. And this will be, incidentally, the first public word from our Secretary of State since Russia pumped new life into the Russian Comintern. Well, there was other top labor news today. The AFL is ready to spend $2 million, up to $10 million, to fight the anti-strike law politically, to embark on a new line of political action in 1948. We see at the same time the CIO voting to develop to expand its own political action committee. Now, these two groups will not work together. That means there will be no National Labor Party in the immediate future. But these two major labor unions will work in a kind of political unison against the anti-strike bill, and that's an important political development. Still, to one who covers the national news beat these days, the most important labor news came today on the question of wages and the question of prices. You know, the present minimum pay is now, under federal law, 40 cents an hour. You know, too, there's a bill pending in Congress to raise the figure to 65 cents an hour now, and then a year later to 75 cents an hour. Well, the Secretary of Labor, Mr. Louis Schwellenbach, spoke today to the CIO. Schwellenbach says that the cost of living is so high that 65 cents is not enough. Schwellenbach came out for raising the minimum wage straightway to 75 cents. Now, there plainly, there is a shift in administration policy. President Truman was asking Congress only last spring for 65 cents. And plainly, on a question as important as this, the Secretary of Labor would not come out for the 75 cents figure without clearing it with the White House first. We may have, then, our first hint of the 1948 Truman campaign year legislative program, a boost in minimum wages from 40 to 75 cents an hour. Now, this is, incidentally, reporting on prices, an anniversary. It was just 1 year ago today, just before the November elections, that President Truman ordered decontrol of the price of meat. Oh, here this evening, here was a little inside story which may be enlightening. The Democratic National Committee met in Washington early last October. All of the Democratic leaders, Hannigan, Flynn of the Bronx, Kelly of Chicago, were worried that day about one thing. The 1946 congressional elections were coming up in a few weeks, and the voters had plainly enough of OPA, of price control on meat. Well, Hannigan, Kelly, and Flynn did what they thought would be politically expedient. They called on President Truman to decontrol meat. Well, I happened to be covering the news that day. I went straight from the Democratic political meeting to the White House. Mr. Truman, it happened, was holding a news conference, and he wanted to talk about meat, too. Well, you'll probably remember what the president had to say. He recalled his days as a Missouri farm boy, how he used to drive his cattle to market. The president came out flat-footed against decontrolling the price of meat. And this time he said he knew what he was talking about. Well, it was plain to see that afternoon, standing in the president's office, that no one had reached him from the Democratic National Committee. Well, I broke the news to President Truman in the form of a question. He stopped and thought a moment. His jaw dropped slightly. He said finally, well, it made no difference what the politicians said. He was against taking price ceilings off meat. However, on October 14th, 1946, just a year ago today, the president changed his mind on meat. He exercised his authority. He ordered the decontrol board set up by Congress to take off price ceiling. Now, this was plainly, everybody admitted it in Washington, a political move. Well, the Democrats lost Congress anyway. This story is put down this evening, then a year later, just for the record. The record, who decontrolled one of our important foodstuffs and its price, and why the decontrol order came. Well, at the United Nations at Lake Success today, It was more of the same of feuding and of fighting. Mr. John Foster Dulles presented the American plan this afternoon to set up a special permanent little assembly. Now, this brought the Russian, Andrei Vyshinsky, back to the attack. Vyshinsky said once again that Dulles is a warmonger, and he called our proposal the work of reactionary circles. But apparently, when it comes to deciding this proposal on the basis of its merits, we have the votes. Now, there is more diplomatic news this evening. This news comes from the inside the famous conference at Yalta, from inside even the Kremlin. Oh, I reported to you last Thursday evening the charge of Henry Morgenthau, Jr. against the Truman administration. Now, the wartime Secretary of Treasury says that President Truman cut off Lend-Lease to Britain too abruptly, that President Truman is the man to blame for the economic collapse of Europe. Well, our recent Secretary of State, Mr. James F. Burns, has just written a book. It's called Speaking Frankly, and that's exactly what Mr. Burns does. Now, Burns tells us about the Roosevelt-Churchill conference at Quebec, the war conference in 1945. And, directly refuting Morgenthau, Burns writes that as a result of that meeting, we were to give Lend-Lease to the British only through VJ Day, which we did. Now, this Burns book gives us some really amazing revelations. Again at Quebec, President Roosevelt, Churchill, signed an agreement there at Quebec to strip Germany of all industry, to follow the Morgenthau plan, that is, to make the Germans a nation of farmers. Well, when President Roosevelt came back to Washington, Secretary of War Stimson called on him to argue against this plan. Well, I'm quoting the Burns book here and mark the words. The president agreed with Mr. Stimson. He told the Secretary of War that he did not know how he had initialed that particular language. It must have been done, Mr. Roosevelt said, without much thought. Well, Burns takes us on to Yalta. Roosevelt, Stalin, and Churchill were planning that day the United Nations. And again, mark these words, Burns writes now that from the way Stalin talked at Yalta, he could not be greatly interested in the United Nations organization. Well, then Mr. Burns brings us yet another story from Yalta. Stalin insisted there on 3 votes for Russia in the United Nations. He wanted 1 for the Soviet, 1 for the Ukraine, and 1 for Byelorussia. Well, Mr. Roosevelt agreed to 3 votes for Russia. Well, Stalin offered in return to give the United States 3 votes. President Roosevelt decided not to take these votes. And Burns writes this, in granting 3 votes to the Soviet Union, we established a precedent. And as Burns notes, the Soviets do not overlook precedents favorable to themselves. A former Secretary of State, Burns, speaks very frankly of Stalin personally. This story, the scene is the conference at Potsdam, so close to VE Day in Europe. Stalin asked that day for a slice of Italy. Burns says this, the Atlantic Charter was a forgotten pledge. Stalin wanted territory. Well, finally, we're getting the true story of American wartime diplomacy. Good night.
And now here's Lyle Vann for the Pure Oil Company.
Good night, Mr. Harkness. Just a word about permanent type antifreeze. It's going to be scarce again this fall. The Pure Oil brand is called One Fill. Our friendly advice is see your Pure Oil dealer now. He'll take care of you with One Fill if he possibly can, but don't delay. For that matter, don't delay in asking for your complete changeover service for winter, bumper-to-bumper service. Get it all when you arrange for your one-fill antifreeze. The complete oil change and fresh lubrication, cooling system service, air cleaner and spark plug service, and that 10-point safety checkup. Your car needs it all and needs it now. So get it all and get it early this fall. Bumper-to-bumper service. Wherever they sell those very swell Pure Oil gasolines. At the big blue and white Pure Oil sign. Be sure with Pure. And be sure to tune in Pure Oil News Time tomorrow night at this time. Pure Oil News Time features H.V. Kaltenborn on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and Richard Harkness on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Be sure with Pure.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.